home is much more than four walls and a roof, isn't it? It's a place to relax and recharge, to spend time with friends and family, and a whole lot more. And sometimes a well-planned remodeling project can make your home function better, can add value at the same time. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Net. Talking today with a couple of experts about remodeling and homes, and I hope you'll listen in and call in with your questions. Chad Spate's been with us many times. Chad's Design Build, comes by every couple of months to share information with us. And Chad, great to see you again.
Thanks, Larry. Always great to be here.
Pleased to have you here, and also pleased to have Melinda Monroe with us, president and co-owner of Architectural Building Arts. Melinda, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you, Larry. Really a pleasure to be here with you today.
Well, it's so much fun to have you here. And I kind of wanted to zero in a little on remodeling projects today. It seems like, is this kind of the time of the year when people, or is it just year-round on remodeling projects? Melinda, what do you think?
I think it can be year-round, but people oftentimes somewhere around March or so, I think, with winter here, get bored and start thinking what would be a fun thing to do for summer and spring.
So business picks up for you guys in a way, at least more context, Chad.
Correct, yeah. Yeah.
Well, the most common remodeling projects, what are typically, from your perspective?
Yeah, well, so kitchen and bathroom remodels are always
the big ones
going on. You know, that's kind of a given. And there was a time when people were building a lot of additions, and I think that's not quite as prevalent. It still happens, of course.
Yeah.
Bumping houses up, you know, let's say you got a 1.5 story and you want to make that second floor more useful, add a few dormers, something like that.
Yeah.
That sort of thing is still happening. But, you know, adding the sunroom or the family room or bumping out a kitchen, lower level renovations.
Yeah, so there's lots going on. And Melinda, I specifically, because you haven't been with us in the past, you're the president co-owner of Architectural Building Arts. And tell us about your business.
Well, we're a full service design build company, and I've been with the firm for over 20 years. And I am in partnership with my son, middle son Aaron. And our other partner recently retired, Steve Larson, so he was the founder of ABA. And we started out in his basement, and we're now in the Quarry Hill building next to Whole Foods.
In Madison.
Yes, in Madison. Great location. And really enjoy and love what we do. I think it's really challenging at times, but wonderful to change the urban fabric that's out there and, you know, make differences in people's lives for a long period of time.
Yeah, it really can. I know that for a fact. There's an interesting chart in, was it Remodeling Magazine, that looked at all the different kinds of remodeling jobs and how much value they added to the home. And I took a look at it, and one of the things I noted was that there is not a single one that adds more than, well, I think maybe 86% or something like that was the highest. And mostly they're around that 53 to 60% in terms of cost recoup.
Yes.
Right.
So you're not going to get rich.
No, not from the remodel. But I think if what people oftentimes will assess is if they love the neighborhood, if they're happy with the majority of the home and there's just some things that they would like to change to fit their lifestyle, open it up, you know, add things to, you know, if there's two cooks versus one cook, those types of things, they'll find. And kids and schools are a big one too. They'll put the money, think of it as an investment for family.
Or sometimes the kid's leaving and now we can, that one bedroom can maybe turn into an office or something else too.
Yes.
So, yeah, I imagine it goes both ways that way.
Spa bathrooms are a big one when children leave.
Oh.
Parents decide that, yay, they're out of the house. We're going to have a spa bathroom scene now, so that's a good one, too.
I love it. Well, I haven't even given the number yet, so let me do that right now. If you would like to join in with a question or comment, are you considering a remodel or maybe a question about what's going on in your home. Hopefully your roof isn't leaking right now. Give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And we'd certainly love to talk with you. And just before we go to the phones and our emails, and Nick in Milwaukee, we'll get to you in just a minute. In terms of value added, where are you going to recoup the most? Will you recoup the most from a bathroom remodel, maybe a kitchen? Or does it, I suppose to some extent, it just depends on what the original looks like.
I think that's a really big factor, Larry, because... And realtors are good, too, at giving this sort of advice, you know, walking through a home with a homeowner and talking about the things that are really dated and really worn out. And it's always an interesting decision whether or not, if you're looking to sell a home, whether it makes sense to make those improvements yourself or whether you're going to let the next person do it, given the payback numbers.
Yeah.
But... a lot of it, as Melinda said, so much of it has to do with your quality of life. And if your bathroom just isn't functioning the way it's laid out, or your kitchen just doesn't work for you, and you can't comfortably cook a meal, what is the value of making it a functional, inviting space? You know, you really can't easily put a dollar amount on that, because it allows you to enjoy your home in a way that you weren't able to do before.
Yeah, and so what's the difference if it's... you're only going to recoup down the road 50% of the cost. In the meantime, you're enjoying the home and the remodel.
Right.
For as long as you have the home. So, yeah, I can see that. Nick in Milwaukee wondered, he moved into a 50s ranch home. Looks like the interiors haven't been updated since the 70s. I'd like to replace the very worn carpeting in the kitchen, but my husband's afraid there's asbestos underneath. Is that a common problem, and how do you safely deal with it? I'd be surprised if there was asbestos under the carpeting in a kitchen, but maybe.
Well, it could. So it's
kitchen.
Yeah, it's common that the tile that would be down on the floor, even the mastic that is there's often a tar paper mastic that has asbestos kind of impregnated into it, and so the only way to know if you have asbestos in a material is to have it tested.
Yeah.
And
that can be done pretty easily.
Correct, correct. The best thing to do is to have someone who is in the business of testing for asbestos to come out to your home and take some samples, and then they'll get back to you, and then they can often let you know what it would cost to take it out. Though it's also important to keep in mind that if you don't disturb asbestos, there's no harm or danger.
And leaving it,
Right. So if you wanted to, say, put a new carpet or new flooring over top of that old floor, there's no need to...
The fact that there was carpet there, there's some thickness there, you could probably almost either go with maybe another tile or cork. I have cork in my kitchen. I love cork. It's so nice on your feet. And you can be in the kitchen for long periods of time cooking and not get tired. So cork or tile or maybe a new, as you say, another carpet.
Right.
Makes good sense to me. Have you done mold remediation? I'm sorry, not mold remediation, but remediation for asbestos, Melinda? You probably have it done, or do you do it yourself?
We have a subcontractor that specializes in that come in.
Yeah, you probably want somebody that, I mean, the cost of having to do it, you probably want somebody that's got the equipment and has done it many, many, many times. Yeah, makes good sense. Randy in Grafton, your turn. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, just kind of a point to point out, I suppose. We bought our house back in the 80s, and it was built in the 70s. And, of course, we thought we'd only live here a couple of years because my husband was in the military at the time. But, you know, many years later, we're still here. So we've remodeled it 3 times now, a little bit here, a little bit there. And then the last one was a total remodel of the downstairs, gutted everything, started over again. But the thing that we considered was that we only spent $90,000 on it in the beginning, and we've been in it so long that when we started the remodeling, we were still well under its current value. So for all the money we've put into it, it is now worth way more than it would have been had we not remodeled, but we've never gone past what it's worth.
Yep.
So I guess what I'm saying is, in this case, we're kind of recouping everything and then some.
Yeah, that was a good point. Comment, Chad?
Well, that's the way I think most people look at a home, is they're always wanting to be at that break-even point. But the interesting thing is that, you know, how many things do we buy that pay us back, allow us to benefit from them, and then they pay us back in full when we're done? I mean, it's an unusual thing, and houses have that kind of magical, appreciation that they have historically earned the owner. Mm-hmm. But there's nothing that says that you have to get your money back from something. You know, when you buy a car or something else, it's not going to pay you back, and you're going to enjoy it.
Yeah, absolutely. I can remember a house before this one, we bought on a lake home, and I was like, oh my gosh, am I ever going to pay for this? And we did some remodeling over the years, and we sold it here a couple of years ago, and as you say, we got back everything and then some that we'd put into it, and had a nice little chunk of money, basically, you know, the original value of the house. It was amazing how that works. It works very well sometimes. Rick and Harsha, your turn. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I have a question. I'm in the planning stages of a remodel, and there are many, many window choices, and up to and including this new passive design and the new Energy Star standards. And my question would be is, what is, in a remodel with an existing home that is designed and built in the late 70s, what would be the most cost-effective and energy-efficient window for that? It seems like there's diminishing returns. You can go to really high R values and low infiltration. There's a company called Alpen that makes an extremely good triple glazed window, but it seems like there's got to be a crossover point. That, and then what are, in your opinion, the best materials? I'm kind of leaning towards a fiberglass window as opposed to vinyl or wood clad. So I'd be interested in your panel's ideas on both those questions.
Oh, okay. They probably both have some thoughts about it. Melinda, what about you?
Well, I think, you know, there's, like you said, there's a number of ways that you can go. We oftentimes will put Marvin windows in. We've had really good success with them, but certainly there's a lot of options out there, and I think it depends on, you know, overall, if you are going for the passive solar design, that's something you'll want to consider as well, you know, what you've researched and what you've looked at.
Yeah, Chad, comment?
Yeah, so one interesting thing when we, you know, since we started today talking about payback on things, if you're looking at energy savings with window replacements, typically the study suggests that it takes about 30 years to pay back the energy you save by upgrading to a high efficiency window. And of course, the higher performance the window, the more expensive it is.
Yep.
So it still ends up being about a 30-year payback. So people don't tend to replace their windows for that reason. They're going to be quieter. They're going to function better. I think fiberglass is really the material of the future for windows. I mean, I still tend to be a little bit of a traditionalist and love a good, you know, wood window.
Yeah.
But the fiberglass as a material, it's more stable than wood. It's paintable. It doesn't conduct heat or lose heat as much as wood. I mean, it's almost superior in every way. It can be repaired. Mm-hmm. So it is an excellent material, and a number of manufacturers like Marvin have done some great things with fiberglass to create a whole new, you know, type of product.
And, you know, I was just thinking about my own home. This is a 1906 home. We replaced all the windows in the home when we got it and started over again. But we're able to buy windows of that nature that actually look like and sort of matched the design of the original window, so it looks like the same window, kind of in a way, but certainly a lot more energy efficient.
Correct.
Yeah, certainly. Rick, I hope that helps. Thanks a lot for calling. I appreciate your call. We're taking a look at trends in home remodeling. We're looking at return on investment and certainly answering your questions about home remodeling. And join in, 1-800-642-1234, the number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page. Just go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page for that. I'm Larry Mueller. Jennifer Dargan, our on-air producer today here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking about the complexities of home remodeling language, and with our two guests today, Melinda Monroe, president and co-owner of Architectural Building Arts, with her son Aaron. She's been involved with ABA for about 20 years now. She's also past president of the National Association of the Remodeling Industry, or NARI, that we talk about many, have talked about many, many times on this program. And one of the people who's talked about it a lot is our other guest, Chad Spate, who owns Chad's Design Build in Madison, formerly Chad's Carpentry. And it's great to have both of them here today. Our lines are all filled, but here's the number to remember, 1-800-642-1234. Give a call or email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Let's go to Lois in Oconomowoc next. Hi, Lois. Thank you for calling.
Well, hello. I'm so excited to be on the show. Thank you.
Appreciate the call.
My question is, it is kind of payback question, but we have a second home in Oconomowoc, which we do share. We have frontage on a lake, and we're in association, so we have a pier, and then we share the pier with the people on the lake. So it's a beautiful piece of property. Our problem is this home was built, 60, 70 years ago. It was part of a farm estate, and it's really, really run down, and we're trying to decide whether or not it's worth. My husband determined that it does have a strong foundation, but it's all very old. New windows, new roof, and it's a single family, and we're trying to decide whether to remodel or tear down. And we have to sell it for our retirement purposes. So we know we probably won't get out of it what we paid for it because we bought it at the wrong time. But we're still trying to determine if it would be wiser to tear down and make it like a, not a slip or whatever you call it. But
How long do you plan to live in it, by the way, Lois?
We aren't living in it. This is a second home.
Oh, it's a second home. Sorry, I'm sorry. Okay.
Yeah, and it's on the lake. It's a second home. We have to remodel the other one, too.
Get your checkbook out.
Okay. Yeah, that's a problem. They would probably bounce wherever we would go, yeah.
You know, I'm going to throw in 2 cents and then let the experts actually talk. This is something Chad said earlier. I think if you talk to a realtor in that area, someone who sells properties on the lake, on your lake or nearby, I would
done that.
Have you? Okay.
Yes, I have.
What are they recommending?
Either or.
Okay, well, we've got that set. What do you think, Chad? We'll go to you first.
Well, so one of the interesting things about remodeling, and I think we've kind of been hinting at this when we were talking about what you get back when you remodel, remodeling costs more than what it adds to a home, often because you've got to tear apart what's there and make it all work and update it. And, you know, there's a lot of effort, a lot of time and material that goes into that deconstruction and integration of old and new. And one of the advantages to just tearing down a home is that you don't have to fool around with all that stuff. You can just build the new home, and typically a new home is worth what it costs to build it because you're not having to do all of that other stuff that has a cost. But then, of course, you're out the value of that building that's already sitting there, which you're going to tear down.
Yeah.
So you're going to lose that. So it's often.
Let me tell you.
I'm sure it's difficult. Melinda, anything to add on your end?
No, I think, you know, Chad summarized it well. You really it is easier if you just tear things down and start over, but you will lose the value of what's existing now. So you're going to kind of have to weigh it.
It's a small ranch, 3-bedroom. Is there a price range for how much it costs to tear down? I mean, just physically, to have someone come in to tear the place down to get it ready for building?
Frankly, to tear it down, I don't think it's all that expensive. when you think about it, isn't it? Is it, Chad?
I think, you know, it's. I hesitate, but depending on all the variables, I mean, $5,000 to $10,000 probably for someone to come along and scoop it up and you know, put it in a dumpster.
Yeah,
depending. Right. I mean, it's all there are a lot of variables, but
One thing that since it's on a lake, one thing that I would look at are the local ordinances. There may be new ordinances that would affect new construction that if you were remodeling, I know that's the case in Madison, that's why I'm bringing it up. There are sometimes people will remodel extensively here in Madison because if they were to build new, they would, the setback issues and one thing and another would.
Right.
So you want to make sure that if you're going to rebuild or build a new place, that you're going to be able to put it in the same spot and the same amount of space or whatever before you make it.
Yeah, that's an excellent point, Larry. That often drives a decision.
Having lived on a lake here in Madison, I'm quite familiar with that.
Yeah, that's a great point.
Well, I know. We're at least off the lake because we're in a cul-de-sac with four other people.
Okay.
And then we do share the frontage, so
okay.
I don't think that's an issue.
Okay, that may not be.
The only thing is we're next to a wooded preserve. That might have some issues, but then also it's a nice acre and a half lot. So,
oh, boy.
Think, you know, the beauty of the place is the lot.
Yeah, well, I tell you, hey, Lois, let me know. Give us a call next time. I want to know what you decide because you've got my interest up now. It sounds like there may be some leaning toward a new home. And, of course, if both of my guests went and took a look at your home, they might change their minds. But having not seen it, you know, I can tell you from experience that there's a lot fewer headaches associated with putting up a new one than remodeling old. Believe me, I've had a lot of experience with that. Good luck, Lois. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Guy in Hartford, I want to give you a chance. Hello.
Hello. Say, I just recently lost the sale of a house, or I just kind of withdrew my offer, but it had some basement issues, and not all engineers follow the WAFRP standards for repairing basements that are, you know, over 1 inch of plumb. So is that kind of standard? I mean, if someone wrote a standard, wouldn't most people want to follow that standard for a resale of a home?
Could you describe what the issues with the basement were? And what type of basement is it? Is it a poured foundation?
It was a block foundation.
Okay.
And it was in over an inch. It was actually over in 2 inches. And they just kind of wanted to brace it instead of excavating and then bracing. So is that kind of a norm?
Well, there are different ways to essentially shore up the home and to shore up the foundation. And so while it might seem best to tear it apart and redo it properly, you know, sometimes there are mitigating circumstances that make that difficult, depending on other houses and setbacks and just a variety. There might be a tree or something out there that you would essentially kill or have to remove to deal with it that might be causing the problem. So these are the sorts of things that would have to be, you know, considered.
Yeah.
There was nothing in the way. It just needed to be excavated, and I just don't understand if there's a standard, why not all engineers or whatever follow those standards?
I don't know that there's such a standard, as there's different approaches and people do take them, and it depends on who did the construction and, you know, what their approach to that situation is. Not everybody always hires an engineer to figure things out, so... But, you know, it always comes to play when you certainly are selling a home. The other thing that comes is that building science changes over years. So depending on when the home was built versus, you know, when you're selling it, that type of situation.
Yeah, I was thinking about our 1906 four-square home where we went down to make the basement so that you could walk around in it without banging your head. Realized there were no real footings that were put in. Originally, and so now we're down another 3 feet. So then, you know, there went an engineer and footings, and I don't know, $8,000 or whatever, $8,000 or $10,000 we weren't thinking about. There can be considerable cost related to that.
Right.
We had a Facebook. We had a Facebook comment from Mark. He says, as an energy auditor, I wish I could get into every home before a remodel gets done. I've tested many homes that have energy or comfort issues related to things being missed during the remodel. I know Chad's company does a great job. Many contractors are behind the curve on home performance work. This kind of stuff is easy to do during the work, but difficult to do afterwards.
That's an excellent point. And actually, I looked at a house the other day that it was a situation where an air conditioning system had been installed up in the attic of the home because they have radiant heat. They had, you know, remodeled previously. I mean, I was there really to look at the comfort and energy issues, but the previous contractor had not really given much thought to what needed to happen in that attic before it was filled up with the air conditioning system and all the duct work, and it was really a bad situation, and it would be very expensive to make that properly air sealed and insulated now that that system's up there. It's almost like we'd have to remove it and then reinstall it. So that, you know, it was just a reminder of why it's important.
Well, and I, you know, we had an energy audit done on our lake home when we first, at one point, and before we did some remodeling in the home, and it was made a huge difference because the energy auditor, as Mark said, you got a priority. He had a whole list of things that needed to be done, and here's if I were doing it, but I couldn't do it all, I do it in this order. And that would be the most efficient and cost-effective way. Well, as it turned out, I think we did it all in one fell swoop. It was really a valuable and educational experience because they spent a lot of time with you and go over things. And I don't remember. I think it was $300 or something like that. We even got some money back as part of a energy program through the state. So
it's well worth the investment.
Oh, Was it ever? And it really made it. It was really quite amazing to go outside and see where the air leaks were coming from. I was really quite surprised. We have Rose in Appleton next. Rose, hi. Thanks for calling.
Thank you for taking the call. I have a question about the payback associated with roofing, and the big question is whether or not to get a metal roof. I have a relative recently who put on a metal roof. It cost a huge amount of money. The argument is that it'll last a lifetime, and, they're not going to live in it for a lifetime. I wondered if they could comment on the metal roof.
All right. And you're seeing more and more metal roofs, at least in the Madison market. I'm seeing a lot of them, Melinda.
Yes, I think, Rose, that's certainly an investment decision. You are going to, the roof will outlive you, I suspect. It would outlive me at this point, too. And you just really have to determine. It's lower maintenance, and, you know, there's pluses that come with, you know, in the interim of having that metal roof, but it is a more costly investment.
Yeah. If you were going to put a new one on your roof, would you do it, a metal roof?
Not on my current home.
Yeah.
But
sometimes aesthetics could play a role, although I guess the metal roofs now, there are you're seeing a broader range of colors and things.
Yeah, they'll look like almost any roof now, a metal roof. It can look like cedar shakes or clay tiles or whatever you want, but it's a metal roof that interlocks up there.
And what's the lifetime of one of those? We're talking about, in our lifetime, well, is it 50 years?
I believe it's 50. You know, I think it depends, again, on what type of metal roof, but typically it's somewhere in that range, yeah.
And
What are the benefits to that versus the other roof?
Well, maintenance is one, I would think, because you're going to another roof, what is it, 15, 20 years maybe, that you're going to be replacing?
Yes.
Typically, yes.
So if you're going to be there longer than 20 years, you put one metal roof on, you're not going to have to do it again.
Yeah.
And it probably, I don't know, it may or may not add some value in terms of if you go to sell a home, to say, well, here's a metal roof on here that's probably going to live as long as you're ever going to be in the home, I would think that would have some sort of appeal, too.
So why do you think you're seeing so much of it in Madison now? Is it in newer homes or remodeling?
A lot of remodeled. In my neighborhood, there's quite a few have gone up in my neighborhood, which is an older neighborhood of Madison. And I'm not quite sure. I think there are people in our neighborhood who are never going to leave. You know, they're going to go out feet first in our neighborhood. So I think that may be one reason why in our neighborhood.
Yeah, and I think the fact that you can make your roof look a certain way,
yes,
even though you're not necessarily using the traditional materials that it looks like it is, it has this, you can do things with a metal roof you just can't do with a traditional, three-tab shingle.
Yeah, and I'm not sure, and you guys probably don't know exactly, but what's the difference in cost between a metal and just the typical? Is it?
It's roughly double, I would say.
It's about twice the cost?
Sometimes a little more.
But it's going to last more than twice as long.
Right.
Probably.
So
my relative spent $25,000, and the comp for non-metal, high quality was like 13.
Yeah.
Yep.
So about for seven in the, under those circumstances, for $7,000, if you feel like you can swing that cost, for me, I personally would say, okay, another $7,000, then I never have to worry about it again. That's how I would look at it. You may say, hey, I'm leaving in 4 years.
You know, one of the things that we often help our clients think about, and this is something you'd think about with a metal roof, you know, it's easy to, let's say, do an addition or something and connect to a traditional roof.
Ah.
And when you put on a metal roof, things are a little different.
Yeah.
And everything has to be kind of made to fit that profile of the roof.
Yeah.
And it depends on exactly the type of metal roof we're talking about, because there are many types of metal roofing materials, but that can be an issue, and you'll have quite a bit more expense to integrate to the roof
if you
in
ever
some circumstances.
Yeah,
there
you go, Rose. One more thing to worry about. Thanks much for calling. You should also shoot me an email and let me know what you decide. I'd love to hear. And again, thank you so much for calling. Michael in Milton has a question for you guys. Hi, Michael.
Oh, hey, how's it going?
Great, appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
Thanks for taking my call. I have a 12-year-old house. We're out in Middleton. And the contractor was a criminal. He went bankrupt. So we have a criminal siding job. And the house is 12 years old. It's been painted three times in 12 years. and we had a bunch of boards replaced. It's the cedar siding, but it's not the open grain face thing. It's like smooth. And when it was put on, I think they only sealed it on one side, which is bad enough. And then they used a nail gun to install it, and the nails are too big. They drove it in too far, and they didn't like stagger it. And I'm trying to figure out, it's like, at what point do we pull the plug on, you know, repainting this? Because it's a debacle, and just get new siding. And if we're looking at new siding, what should we do?
Hmm. Yeah, because then you got to tear the old off. I suppose you could put new on, but
that's
difficult around windows and everything else. Well, Melinda, what do you think?
Well, Michael, depending on, you know, certainly what you have to invest in it, it's always better to not Band-Aid a bad situation, but to try and assess what's the opportunities to go to a new product. And certainly, you know, there's some out there, and, you know, the hardy plank siding would be a direction that, you know, we would certainly assess and recommend, simply because it's going to hold the paint for a really long time. You can factory order it so that it's coated on both sides. Sometimes if you really like the colors that they offer, you can do two coats of it and then just touch up once it's installed. I would recommend hiring a NARI contractor so that you have a good contractor. And I don't often, you know, put a plug in for that, you know, on the radio, but certainly...
We got burned the first time.
I'm sure you did. It's very unfortunate. I'm sorry that happened. But, you know, just protect yourself, too, moving forward. And, but that's the direction I would recommend as much as you can, even if you can't side the whole thing to begin with. I've had clients do it in stages where, you know, do the front side of a house and then maybe the back side. But certainly start with something where you're going to go new and take care of the problem for the long term.
Yeah. What about cement siding?
That's like the hardy plank. It's just a different name for it.
Yeah, I've had that on our lake home and love that siding. And the paint job on that, the paint is really held. Oh, my goodness. I was quite, and it was yellow, which is one of the worst types of paint in terms of fade, that at least that's what the paint people told mm-hmm. us.
Yes.
But I go by that home, and now we sold it it's been painted 10 years ago, and it looks like it's brand new.
Right, right. Yeah, a lot of the products that we install on homes when we re-side, they come with a paint finish that it often has a 25-year warranty on it. So if it's a painted product,
it's a great deal.
You know, yeah.
So something to think about, Michael.
Yeah, I know. as opposed to painting every 3-4 years, and we've already, you know, stuck a couple $1,000 into like replacing boards. Yeah, it's bad.
You know, right. And think about how much agony and how much your ulcer has started to grow over the last 3 or 4 years with this being mad about this work being done. You know, maybe sometimes, as my guests are saying, you know, it's better just to, hey, start over. It's done. It's going to look great. You're not going to have to paint it. The worries go away.
Well, yeah, and there's a real opportunity, too, when you take off all the siding on a home, you can make sure that the rain plane, which is behind the siding, is all properly detailed. And if the contractor wasn't particularly ethical, then the odds are pretty good that there are a lot of details that weren't done right. And so you've probably got minor water infiltration happening all over the house that's over time going to deteriorate the structure. So re-siding the home with a you know, quality conscious professional will allow you to address that issue, which is a really good thing to address every 50 or 100 years on a home. So,
Michael, good luck. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, thank you very, very much.
You're welcome. Good luck with that.
Yeah, good luck with it. Appreciate it very much. Talking about home remodeling and return on investment with your remodeling, and certainly answering your remodeling questions today, our guest, Melinda Monroe, president, co-owner of Architectural Building Arts, with her son Aaron. and Chad Spate. Chad owns Chad's Design Build in Madison, formerly Chad's Carpentry. I'm Larry Mueller. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you listening in on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio with Larry Mueller here with Melinda Monroe and Chad Spate to talk with you about home remodeling and repair. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Go back to metal roofs for just a minute. Chris asked a question, are metal roofs noisier in a rainstorm? And now I don't have a metal roof, so I haven't had any experience at it, but what say you?
They can be. Yes, they can be? You can hear noise from them. Some people like it. They find it, you know.
Yeah, it would kind of remind me of a tent, being in a tent during a rain, which I loved. I always loved that.
There can be some noise from them.
Yeah. Okay, a little bit there.
Even more so in a hailstorm.
Yeah. Well, that's another issue. If you get a hailstorm with a metal roof, you're going to wind up with bumpy roof, as opposed to although a hailstorm can wreck standard
asphalt
shingles as well.
Well, that's always one of the challenges. I mean, with the kind of extreme weather events that we tend to see more of now, the potential downside to some of these materials that are marketed to last for 100 years is that if they don't look good after a particular weather event, then you've got a problem. And but having said that, I mean, you know, so one of the reasons that the Hardy Backer fiber cement board has become so popular is that it's very durable.
Yes.
It holds up well to a hailstorm, whereas, say, a metal, siding, aluminum siding or steel siding will get dented.
Yeah.
The material on a roof is often a little bit thicker gauge, but I don't know what the breaking point is for where that starts to look bad. So.
Kay in Minocqua has a question for you. Hi, Kay. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Can you hear me, Larry?
Yes, I'm fine. You're fine, Kay.
Okay. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm turning a screen porch into a three-season porch, and I need some help in deciding which windows to purchase for this project.
Okay, so it's so you're turning it into a three-season room?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So you want a window with a screen, I would think?
Yes,
or
window. Yes. Well, actually, I'm going to end up with 11 windows.
Okay, kind of a good size room then.
Well, you're going to have a lot of options. It really depends on how you want those windows to function for you. So, and it may depend on what the rest of the house has on it, so that it looks nice with it. I presume this is a porch that is attached to your home.
I have some very expensive double hung windows on the house, but I don't think I'd want to put those into the screen porch, that expensive a window into the screen porch.
Okay.
But well, if you're not going to use it in the wintertime, probably you don't need it.
Right. I guess it's just a combination of functionality and aesthetics and budget.
Do you have some suggestions at a medium-priced window?
Melinda, what do you think?
Well, I think you can go a couple different ways. As far as medium price, it just depends. Have you worked with a designer at all, or are you just designing this space? Or tell me a little bit about how you've gotten to this place to begin with.
Well, I had the screen porch built by a contractor, and then I'm having some friends and I are going to work on turning it into a three-season porch.
Okay. So, as Chad had said there's a lot of different options to go out there, and every window manufacturer will have, we used to call it like a good, better, best, and you're probably looking for something in that better range. My recommendation, just because there's so many options, I mean, you've got Marvin's, you got Anderson's, you got Pella's, you got all different kinds of windows, and they all have a medium brand that is out there, so it'd be less money. Check with like your lumber yards or your, you know, Home Depots or your whatever you have in your area. You're in Minocqua.
Minocqua area.
I'm not as familiar with that area, but
pretty much a little of everything there.
I would check locally just to see what brands are carried in your area, and then, you know, certainly you can go with that mid range. But I agree with Chad. You want to try and go for a look that's going to kind of harmonize with the house, even if you are going with something less expensive, just to keep that look. You can still get something that isn't the high quality that you put in the home, but to kind of stay with that look of the house.
Yeah.
I mean, one option that I would just mention, and I don't know if this is appropriate for you, but for some clients, it's common to enclose a porch using essentially storm windows.
Yeah.
And that is definitely a lower cost way to go. And it still gives you essentially glass panels that operate similar to a double hung unit, but it's often a metal frame and, you know, glass panels that have metal around them. And there are manufacturers now that have vinyl windows that are also quite popular. So you've got a variety of options for ways to enclose it. Mm-hmm. That might, because you are going to end up spending quite a bit of money to properly trim out and finish a traditional window. And so if you wanted to forego those costs, then that might be a way to
do it. Yeah, that's pretty good tip.
Well, would you have the option of having the screen, have it open to a screen?
Some of those, well, so depending on the type of system you put in, oftentimes you can have if you have three storm panels, for example, on a triple track enclosure, then you can put them all in one of the spaces, and two thirds of the screen is open, mm-hmm. or two thirds of the space is ventilated.
So you just slide them over.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah. It's one way to do it. Good luck, Kay. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Penny in Green Lake, it's your turn. Hi, Penny.
Hi. I have an open concept kitchen, and I have an island on that kitchen that, you know, when you're standing in the kitchen, you see the living room and the dining room. And we have bar stools at that island on the outer side, and, you know, people kick that, and it's just drywall. I was thinking about, like, tiling that. Do you have any other suggestions for what to do with that area? I think I had a guy in for a tile estimate. He said I needed 56 square feet, which seemed a lot, but I guess that's the way it is.
So you're talking about tiling the side of the island so that people don't kick it when they...
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
There's marks on there, and I just thought having some other surface there would be a lot easier to take care of.
Or maybe even tile half of it or a third of it.
Yeah. That's an idea, too.
The bottom third, yeah.
The kick part.
Yeah, the kick part.
You could also look at some type of wood, stained wood under there, you know, as well. It'd be less expensive than the tile application.
Yeah.
Yeah, that.
Drywall is going to show up, or, you know, because it's painted, because it's less durable, that's going to show the marks like you're experiencing, but...
Yeah. Okay, I just wondered if you had any other ideas, so thanks for your help.
Thanks a lot for calling. You might just, you know, Green Lake area, there's a couple of establishments nearby. You might take a look at what some of those places have done in their bars, the bar areas of the bar or the restaurant, as to what they've done. And frankly, when I mentioned just tiling part of it, I was thinking of one place in particular in the Madison area. So good luck, Penny, and thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. We have lots of callers online. When Well, let me see here. Let's turn to one more caller, Paul in Wausau. Paul, hi. Thanks for calling.
Sure. Larry, love your show. Thank you very much. And my wife and I are just buying a about a 70-year-old house, and it has a metal siding to it, I'd assume aluminum. The paint is white, and when you put your hand to it, you come away with a chalky type of material. Wondering what we can do to extend the longevity of that siding. I've heard that painting it is not a great idea.
I don't know about that. I painted an aluminum. I had to had my aluminum siding power washed and took it off and then painted. That was. I go by that house now. It's been 15 years and it's still the same paint.
Yeah, it's a great way to go.
Do you have to treat it with any chemical to make sure the paint adheres properly or use a special paint?
To be honest, I'm not sure. But I had a professional painter do it. He knew what he was doing, obviously, because it's never flaked. You can talk to somebody.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to go into, if you're doing it yourself, you're going to go in and talk to someone in the paint store, and you're going to buy the appropriate paint for that.
Yeah.
And then there'll be, recommendations for preparation, and that's what you'll need to do. But you could definitely repaint the siding.
Yeah, and it can last a long, long time. Believe me, my house is living proof of it. My old house is living proof of it. Well, Melinda Monroe and Chad Spade are going to be with us right up till 12:30. You stay with us. Thank you so much for joining us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Investments you make in your home can both make the house function better and kind of in some ways add to its value, but certainly there are a lot of different options to weigh, and it can be difficult to know how to make the best decision. So that's why we have smart, trustworthy professionals on this program to talk with you and help you through that process. Chad Spade, one of them, owner of Chad's Design Build in Madison, formerly Chad's Carpentry, been with us many times. Chad, welcome back. Thank you.
Thanks, Larry. Great to be here.
And joining us for the first time, hopefully not the last, Melinda Monroe, who is president and co-owner of Architectural Building Arts. And Melinda, thank you again for spending time with us.
Well, thank you, Larry. And I just want to say happy birthday to Larry. It's his birthday today.
Ooh,
so
yeah,
nice of you to spend that with us.
Born on Mother's Day, what a gift for Mom. we're having a lot of fun, actually, doing this. Melinda, by the way, we have a website for you up on our Facebook page, I hope. We have it? Yeah, we do. Jennifer Dargan says, yeah, of course we've got it up. Chad, we've got yours up? We've got yours up as
probably,
well?
Yeah.
Of course we have, Jennifer says. So anyway, if you can go to our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show, it's yours is Chad's Design Build, right?
Correct.
And Melinda, yours is?
DesignBuildMadison.com.
DesignBuildMadison.com. So there you have it. And again, if you didn't get those, just go to our Facebook page. Oh, they put up a photo of me. That's not a roadmap you're looking at. There are a few lines in the face, but... there's my birthday picture that Jennifer took. It's up on our Facebook page as well. So when you go there to look at their sites, you will also see another site. And by the way, I've got to mention the gang at in Bayfield. I am driving on my birthday drive this afternoon. I'll be driving to Bayfield, and we'll be broadcasting from Bayfield in Bloom tomorrow. So anyone listening who happens to be in the Bayfield area or within 100 miles will come on over to the Bayfield Pavilion. We'll be there early, at least by 10, and there's lots of exhibits. And last year I came home with a whole pile of plants, as I recall, and some books, and it's a lot of fun. And so if you're in the area, please do stop in and say hi and listen to the show. And that's a really, really pretty building. I love that. I love that pavilion. It reminds me of my youth, a place where I used to go and dance as a young guy. When there was a wedding dance or something, it was at a pavilion that looked a lot like that one. Pete in La Crosse has a question for our two guests, Melinda and Chad. Pete, thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry and guests. I thermal image homes here in the La Crosse area. And more often than not, I find that people will spend a great deal of money in buying new windows, but they're installed poorly at best. And the picture that Jennifer posted on Facebook is an example of that. People need to understand that leakage between the window frame and the frame of the house has to be shut down if we're going to keep the air out. So if your guests could talk about how to install a window properly, in my opinion, that includes foam sealing, and then also maybe shed some light on how to properly rain flash the outside between the Tyvek and the nailing flange, et cetera. And I'll hang on in case you have any comments.
All sure. Right. Well, Pete, thanks a lot. And by the way, you should go to our Facebook page as you listen. Go to our Facebook page. Pete, as he said, posted a photo. He was thermal imaging a poorly installed window, and you can tell from the imaging that it was not installed well.
Yeah, that's crazy. All the cold air is just pouring out from behind the trim, and this is a common thing that we see. It's a great question. Thanks for calling in. Well, let's talk about a few things. I mean, one is the proper water preparation of the opening before you install a window or a door. And the tricks for these installations apply to both windows and doors. A really important step that is not often done is you pan the sill at the bottom of the opening. And essentially what that does is you're creating a collector so that if any water gets through the windowsill, it will hit this pan. It's often just a adhesive material that we apply in the opening, and then the water will go to the outside of the building. It essentially creates a dam towards the inside, so the water will go in, and rather than soaking into the wall, which is what will happen if you don't have a proper pan at the bottom. And it's called a pan, incidentally, because back in the day, there used to be a metal pan that would be put in the bottom of the opening that would collect the water and shed it to the outside. So that's important. And then you're going to want to seal at the top and the sides of the window, but not at the bottom, so that if water does get down into that pan, it is able to get out. Any sealing you do at the bottom has to be done on the inside of the window opening. And then we always will either caulk or use a foam that is a closed cell foam around the window, and that will seal it up. Now, again, one of the things we often see is people will stuff fiberglass around a window, and really that doesn't do much to stop air from moving. If you have sealed the cavity, if you've caulked it or foamed it, and then you put in fiberglass, that's fine, because then air is not moving around the unit, and then the fiberglass or some other material is there to help reduce additional heat transfer. But you've got to stop the air from leaking around the unit, and that's what this thermal image is showing. You're showing air leaking. What good is a great high-efficiency window if all around it you've got air leaking in? So it's an excellent point to bring up. And
yeah, Pete, thanks a lot.
That's why it actually, you know, when you hire a professional to install your windows and to do it properly, it actually it takes quite a bit more time and subsequently costs more money. But that's, at the end of the day, what you're going to get. You're going to get a properly installed product.
There we go. And Pete, thanks again for calling. I appreciate your call. I want to give Cindy and Verona a chance to join us, who's been waiting a while. Cindy, hi. Thank you for calling.
Thank you. Thanks. I wanted to make a suggestion for Penny, who called in earlier with the problem of people kicking the backside of her kitchen island as they sat there. One idea would be to use a pressed metal panel. These are the type of things you used to see in ceilings in historic homes. But they now make them in tile pieces, usually 2 foot by 2 foot tiles that could be nailed up, sometimes as kitchen backsplashes and things like that. It might be an idea for her to use on her island.
I like that idea, and I've seen similar things like that in other restaurants or in bars, because they're also easy to clean.
That's right, and if you chose a very busy pattern, you couldn't tell if people had kicked it and dented it. It would already be dented.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Cindy, thanks. That's a great idea. Appreciate it. I want to give you a chance to join in with your question. Call us at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@WPR.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. And in Waukesha County, emailed us a question, wanted to know how to find a reliable radon mitigation or reduction contractor. The NARI doesn't have this as a member category. She went online to look at the National Association of Remodeling Industry and at least couldn't find it as a member category.
Well, I do know that in the local associations, there are companies that, at least in the Madison NARI, there are some companies that are members of the association who do radon mitigation. So I guess you could always call into your local NARI chapter and ask the question.
If she went to the national site, it might be better to go to the local site.
Correct, because she's going to have to hire a local
obviously
contractor,
a local person anyway. And she may have, even then, I wouldn't shy away from calling somebody from there.
Correct.
And get those. If you're always happy to,
absolutely.
If you can't do it yourself, you're always happy to recommend somebody else from NARI who will do it.
Yep.
Yes,
and does
absolutely.
Do it.
Correct.
We have another comment from Scott, and this goes back to an earlier caller who had lost the paint like 3 times off the siding of his home, and I'm forgetting the type of lumber he had. It was sort of a panel.
Cedar.
Smooth cedar, yeah. And Scott emailed and said, what if you if you stripped all the old paint off, could you then, do it properly on that existing wood? I think there were other problems.
Yeah,
the nails were too big.
Right, and
well,
then he
also... possible rot, too.
Right.
And there was some rot, okay.
And then the backside had not been properly sealed.
But that actually is probably a good suggestion in other situations. If you've got wood that's in decent shape and it just wasn't properly painted the first time around, you can take it, strip it, and start over again.
This is true, but one of the challenges with a wood siding is that if it is not completely sealed on all sides, and it doesn't have to be painted per se, but there has to be some sealant applied to the back side of it so that it's not soaking in the water that will occasionally condense or just leak behind it. And once that wood soaks in that moisture, it's going to want to escape, and then it's going to cause problems with the finish on the exterior side that you see. So.
And a listener emailed something that I brought up, actually, which was a warning to the caller who was considering tearing down their lake house. Current zoning and other laws may not let them rebuild on that site. And that's exactly what I was raising as an issue with that person. But it doesn't hurt to as a reminder as well. If you're going to do that, you better check your laws first. That's for sure. More callers coming in. If you want to join us, the number to call 1-800-642-1234. Melinda, how do you work with a client on their budget? If the remodeling project is way out of their price range, how do you help them achieve what they need without, breaking the bank?
Well, there's a couple ways to do that. Oftentimes, when we meet with people, I suggest that they consider all the things that they're wanting to do and look at a holistic approach to it. And then if it doesn't, if the budget is exceeding what they can spend right now, you can take a phased approach to it, do it over a period of time. Now, granted, not everybody, wants to do that. The other thing is to just try and prioritize, make a list of what are the things that are most important to you? And I think this is a good exercise for people to do even before they begin remodeling, because it's easy to, start adding.
Yes.
And, once you begin the
process. Me.
So if you can prioritize and say, these are the most important things that we want to accomplish, these are the things we'd like to accomplish, and then this is like really if I just waved a magic wand. And that way we can try and accomplish all the things that are the must-haves, but it can be difficult. You know, you have to stay within parameters. Using, you know, less expensive finishes sometimes is where you can, I really try to save some money in that area, but.
Yeah. But it's hard, and, you know, as you start looking at, well, you can have this toilet, or you can have this one that's a little fancier, and, well, that one does look better. Maybe I'll go with that one. And pretty soon, all those little $100 extras, pretty soon you're talking about a lot of money. That's another thing I've experienced. So I know exactly what you're talking about. Harry in Waukesha has something for us.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
And thanks for your program. I love listening to it. I have a house that we built about 20 years ago and has cedar siding on it. And we constantly have birds pecking at the side of the house and making holes in it. In fact, one bird has built a nest. The hole is so big. How do I discourage birds from doing that?
You know, I wish I had a dollar for every person with cedar siding who has called this show over the years with that very same issue that you've got, Harry.
Yeah, there are a variety of tricks, but they don't always work. I mean, one is to put the decoy owls and other sorts of birds of prey out and about to discourage the woodpeckers.
Hanging shiny things, too, is what people have said to deter them. So, and then at the end of the day, at some point in the future, going to a different type of siding, but, you know, I understand that's a huge expense, but
there's,
you will continue to have them, and they will keep coming back as long as you have the cedar siding.
There is a kind of netting that you can place over the overhang of the house and hang it down. That will sometimes, well, will discourage. They won't be able to sort of get in and get at the siding, and that sometimes causes them to go to the neighbors, which is what you're hoping for. I know, and so that's one way. Another way is to, I know one person who stuck a mirror up in a tree at the end of the lot, and the woodpecker spent his day banging on the mirror as opposed to the side of the house. And there's a third way that's probably the least way you'd want to do it, but if there's one bird that is causing that problem, you can get a permit, and it's not from the Department of Natural Resources, although they could give you the proper place. It's from the feds, the Federal Wildlife Service, and you can get a permit to have that, to remove that bird. And that's probably the one way that most people just, I mean, that is really a last. But on the other hand, if it's ruined thousands of, as in some cases, thousands and thousands of dollars worth of siding, that sometimes is the only option that's left.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes the birds are actually, you know, similar to, say, a carpenter ant. It is a sign sometimes that there are problems with the siding. You know, that there's some rot taking place, and or there's some insects in it, and the birds are there because the material is compromised in some way. So, but that's not always the case.
So those are the options that I have been told over the years, that, and even the owl and the shiny things, I mean, those have to be changed in and out a lot because they quickly become inured to those things. So,
right.
And then the siding, getting rid of that cedar siding. I don't think I'd ever, after this program, I don't think I ever would have a home with cedar siding as pretty as it looks, just because of all of the people who've called that have problems with woodpeckers on their siding.
There's a lot out there.
Yeah, there's a lot of cedar siding out there. There's a lot of woodpeckers out there, too. Jeremy and Madison, your turn. Thanks, Jeremy. Jeremy, are you there? Oh, we lost Jeremy. A caller who couldn't stay on the line asked for recommendations on what paint to use over oxidized paint on aluminum siding. And, You know what? That's one I'm sure that you guys go to your, when you're doing remodel, you're working with your paint professional.
Correct.
And yes. I'm,
yeah.
And that's really the way to go, I think.
Correct.
They're the experts. They know what to do.
And to that end, Larry, I wanted to put in a plug. If you're in the Madison area,
yes,
at the end of the month, the final Sunday of the month, which is May 31st, we're having our annual tour of remodeled homes, and there are 14 sites in the tour this year. They're scattered all over the Madison area, Middleton and DeForest and mm-hmm. a few other places. And so it's a great opportunity to see some beautiful projects done by NARI contractors and to meet those contractors at the job sites and really get to know these individuals. My company has participated in the tour many years. We don't have a site this year, mm-hmm. but I think Melinda's company does.
Yes, we participated in the tour every year, and we do have a site this year as well. So,
you know, it is a lot of fun. I mean, it's just fun to drive around and look at those. Unfortunately, I'm going to be out of town this year, but I would just recommend it as a kind of a fun way to spend some a few hours and see what other people are doing. You go away from it filled with ideas.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
And so I'm with you. Scott emailed, has a 100-year-old house built by the owner of a local lumber mill. We sanded off the many layers of paint on the porch to reveal beautiful old tongue and groove fir. Oh, lucky you. But the only finish we could find to apply was Thompson's, which turned out very badly. We were left with a floor covered with sticky, waxy substance that just attracts dirt and sticks to your shoes. Oh, my goodness. We can't use the porch. We'll need to remove this finish and start over, but we still don't know what finish to use. There are outdoor urethanes that are not recommended for walking on, and I can, you know, wondering, what about oils? They're not supposed to be walked on either.
Yeah, I mean, there are products that are made specifically for this. The problem that this individual has had is one that I've heard of before, and I don't know what causes it, but...
I was, you know, I had a floor, this is an indoor floor redone, an oak floor. It was, it looked awful. And there was a finish put on that floor afterwards that was hard as nails and didn't look... It didn't look like there was a finish on it. Mm-hmm. And I'm racking my brains to think, and I don't, you know, I was indoor too, so, but I got to believe there's an outdoor finish that's kind of like that, you'd think.
Right.
There's like a Bono for indoor, but I don't know if it's like you said, there could be a similar equivalent for outdoors.
Yeah, for outdoors,
you
would think.
Because you've got elements that you're dealing with.
Man, I'd go and see, I'd talk with a paint stain professional and see what they could come up with, because you, boy, that tonguing, that sounds just beautiful. I hope you find something, Scott. If you do, take a photo of it and post it on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. I'd love to see that, and love to have you guys back. It's been a lot of fun. Thank you so much for being with us today. Melinda Monroe, president and co-owner of Architectural Building Arts, with her son Aaron, Chad Spate, of Chad's Design Build in Madison, formerly Chad's Carpentry. We had a great time with them. And hey, tomorrow I'll be in Bayfield for Bayfield in Bloom for another edition of Garden Talk. It's going to be a lot of fun. And come if you can. And stay with us. Lots in store.